Welcome to The Fight with Teddy Atlas, presented by Dynamic Striking. I'm Ken Rideout, joined as always by the voice of all combat sports, the legend, Teddy Atlas. Teddy, how you doing?
Doing good. Hope everyone
else. How's the knee?
Yeah, just came from rehab. Thank you for asking. Just finished another rehab session. And it's, you know, it takes time. I mean, I guess the usual recovery on these for with a fully torn ACL, fully torn MCL, the recovery is 9 months to a year. And I've told the physical therapist we're going to do it in, you know, 5 months. I don't know if I'm going to make that, but I'm trying. It's, you know, slower than I want. The problem, they're doing a great job and I'm pushing it. And I'm going every day to rehab. And I'm, you know, I'm going in Manhattan. I'm going to Staten Island. I'm supplementing it. When I'm not in Manhattan, I'm on Staten Island doing it with all good, conscientious people that know what they're doing. The problem for me is the mind. You know, my mind says it's got to be better. And, you know, I got to remind myself sometimes it's only a month. And when I'm still, you know, when it's still tough going up steps or walking sometimes and it's stiff or not able to do certain things, I forget it's, I guess someone's got to remind me it's a month because in my mind I should be doing more. So I, you know, and I'm not the best patient, you know, in the world. Like the physical therapist to say, okay, do 3 sets of 10 and then he'll come back. And look, he goes, seemed like you did more. And I did, you know, 4 sets of 20 because that's how I'm gonna do 5 months. That's how I'm gonna do 5 months if I'm gonna do 5 months. And look, I'm smart enough to understand you can't overdo it and I understand all of that better than most people being in a business I've been my whole life. But a doctor is always their worst patient. The doctor is the worst patient in the world for themselves. And it's the same thing, I guess, with a guy who's been in boxing his whole life, you know, and as a trainer for the period I have for 50 years, you know, including the fighting and everything else. It's hard for me to, you know, to be able to say, okay, we'll go at a slower pace. I want to go at a faster pace, even though I know the need to go at a gradual pace. So Customato used to always have this great saying, Teddy, make hay slowly. And, you know, I hear his words once in a while. So, but I'm not making hay slowly. I'm trying to make it quickly. So, but I'm doing good. I think I'm doing good. I'm just, in my book, it should be better, but I got good people around me. It's coming along good. I had a good weekend. Had a christening for my beautiful granddaughter, Adeline, down in Jersey. It was a beautiful church, beautiful restaurant, beautiful day on Sunday. It was everybody there, the ceremony, the restaurant afterwards in Red Bank, New Jersey. All my family was there. My son and his family came in from Vegas. We, you know, it really makes you truly grateful for being blessed with great family. You know, nothing's perfect in life. Nobody has a perfect family. You know, it might look perfect, but nothing is really behind the scenes is perfect. Everyone has their situations, their ups and downs. But you know, I was thinking yesterday, at the end of the day, if you have a healthy family of people that care about you, how fortunate we are, but really truly grateful you have to be for that. Just, again, nothing in life is perfect, but to have a family that is there and you look around. Especially with my charity foundation, I see more than most people where we're in these places helping people where people don't have family. They don't have anybody. So you have to really be grateful for that. And I am thinking about that, how grateful I am just to have family. And anyway, one of the one of the family members on the other side, on the other side of the family, not blood relatives, but now part of the family, good people, Jack O'Hare. He was there, and we were talking. He watches and listens to the to every episode, basically, of the podcast. And you know how it is with me, Ken. Many of the people that were there, and also at the restaurant, working the restaurant, they all were subscribers to the podcast, which I want to say always makes me happy. But I got to be, a little bit of transparency here. That was part of the consideration for choosing a restaurant. There were three things: good food, great service, environment, of course, and that everybody was subscribed to the to the podcast. Which, of course, I'm kidding. Although some people would probably say maybe he's not kidding. If he could get away with that, he probably would. It's possible I would push the envelope a little bit on that. But anyway, nice weekend. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Hope everybody has family. Before we go into the menu of the weekend and what's coming up next week, which is a big fight next week, somebody just hit me up before I came on the air here with that Mike Tyson, Jake Paul rules just came out for their fight, and that nobody knew whether or not it was a real fight or an exhibition. It's at the AT&T Stadium in Texas where the Cowboys play July 20th. And when it gets closer, we're going to break it down. We'll do a real thorough breakdown on it. I've touched on it in some other episodes already that are in the archives, but what came out today, Ken, I don't know if you saw it, but it's just been sanctioned as a professional fight. And here's the rules. The result will go on official records. Knockouts are allowed. That makes sense in a professional fight.
That's nice of them.
Well, I mean, that usually is the case, right? I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, what were they going to do if you punched someone too hard and knocked them out?
It's not allowed.
Hey, that wasn't allowed.
Sam, I'm a little confused. I mean, does that confuse you a little bit too?
A lot.
Not just me, right? Or Ken, right?
No.
We have company, right?
Disqualified, knocking out.
I just thought it was a good way to break the ice here with the show to start off. And the other rules are 8 2-minute rounds, not 3-minute rounds, 2-minute rounds, and 14-ounce gloves, not 10-ounce gloves. Normally, pro fights are 10-ounce gloves and no headgear, which is normal for a pro fight. Here's my question. How do you call it a professional fight if the rules you're using are not professional rules?
Maybe they're in the non-binary category, given that it's 8 2-minute rounds. I'm sure the women will be happy to see someone stepping down to the shorter rounds.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Ken. All I know is to pick at anything. I'm just putting the news out there, and I'm breaking it down as is our way of doing things on this show. You're calling it a professional fight. We didn't know if it was going to be professional or not. They decided to sanction it as a professional fight in Texas, but it's not the professional rules of a professional fight. It's not 3-minute rounds. It's 2-minute rounds. It's not 10-ounce gloves. It's 14-ounce gloves. Yet it's being called professional rule. Look, they could do whatever they want in boxing, right? I mean, as long as money's there, the commission's going to make money. They're going to bring money into the state. Money's going to come into the coffers for everybody. Boxing is very lenient. Boxing is very pliable. Boxing adjusts. And all of a sudden, we're called a professional fight, even though the rules are not consistent with professional rules. So
I'm surprised that Jake Paul is doing this. He's on the way to like building a legitimate boxing career, regardless of what anyone else thinks. He's having real fights, to now step down to do this kind of exhibition style fight against, you know, 50-something-year-old man. I just don't get the motivation from Jake's perspective.
Well, I do. Jake, he's, I mean, part of it is what it's been from the beginning. You know, he's been very, obviously, very upfront about it. He's in the money-making business. That's, you know, he's...
I know, but everything has consequences, and I think you make more money long-term if you stay the course of having legitimate fights than to have this kind of, like, sideshow-type fight. I think he's developing really nicely. I just don't, I don't understand this. Okay, it's a big spectacle, but I don't get it from a boxing perspective why Jake would want to do this.
Remember that movie?
And I don't think he needs the money. How much money do you need? He said it makes like tens of millions a year.
Is there ever enough money, really? I mean, you've been in the finance.
For me, there is.
You are in the financial business before you got into this.
There's more than enough money. There's a level where you don't need any more, and it's not very much.
Let me ask you this. When it comes down to the raw basic human nature of people, is there ever enough money? If you get down to just, I get what you're saying. I agree. But if you get down.
I think so, because I can give you a million scenarios where you could make money from doing unethical things. And I know you personally wouldn't do it. Neither would I. To me, integrity counts for a lot. And I'm not suggesting they don't have integrity, but there are things that I just won't do for any amount of money.
No, I agree. And it should be that way. And that's what separates us, you know. I think in some ways makes us civilized people and separates us from people that aren't civilized in certain ways. That's one of the things, that there are things more important than just, you know, just money and just power or just anything that is in those categories. And maybe there's judged in those kind of, or weighed in those kind of ways of importance in life. The important thing is to find happiness and hopefully to live a compatible life with other human beings and to, you know, care about other human beings and hopefully to improve as you improve your life, to improve others' lives. And
that's right.
You know, I mean, that to me is really would be what would be defined as being a human being, or some of the things that you would hope to aspire towards to be a good human being. But again, I'm not afraid to go there again. I'm just going to say, when you get down to it, you know, my friend Pedro Martinez, right? I talk about him a lot, Faga, and I talk about a lot of good people that I care about. One day I said, you know, money's the root of all evil. And he corrected me. He said, no, people is the root of all evil. Money becomes the excuse of it and becomes the convenience of saying that it's, you know, that it's money. The convenient, it becomes the word. It becomes the thing that is, again, that is, you know, handy to put the blame on something. And it is a... It is a cliche. It is out there for so many years. Who knows when it first came out there? So it is something to hang your hat on when you want to talk about, you know, things that you don't like, evil things, bad things. Money is the root of those things, and that would kind of be the direction of this conversation, to say that, you know, money gets in the way of everything. Money is the root of all evil. Money is, you know, is something that people don't have enough of. When they don't have enough of it, becomes the root of all evil. You know, that kind of stuff. But again, you have to pull yourself back sometimes from what seems to be the obvious, what's the most convenient thing to say, which is that, and then pull yourself back, like Pedro says, and say, wait a minute. That's just one of the many, you know, things laying out there, you know, the apples on a tree. But at the end of the day, who pulled that apple and ate the forbidden fruit? It was the person. It wasn't the fruit's fault. You know, it wasn't the tree's fault. It was the person's choice. So is it the money's fault? You know, I didn't want to get into what comes first, chicken or an egg contest conversation here. But, you know, is it the money's fault or is it the person's fault? Always the person's fault at the end of the day.
Of course.
Because they make that choice. But look, money is involved in so many aspects of all of society, our life. I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying. I think Jake Paul, I don't know if he still has pure aspirations to become a world champion fighter, find a spot where he can fit in there. Maybe he does. Maybe that's changed a little bit. Or maybe it's always been a hybrid, a combination of, you know, trying to be the best fighter he can be and see where that takes him, as well as at the same time building a promotional company, making a lot of money, promoting other fighters, maybe changing the sport a little bit in his mind too.
Yeah, I think at the core he's a good person, and I wouldn't be surprised if part of his motivation for putting on this fight is knowing it will get eyeballs and being able to put on some of the other fighters there, because like I said, he's got plenty of money and he's on his way to like having a legitimate boxing career. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the motivation to kind of lift up the fighters on the promotion. But who knows? Only he knows the truth. I just, I would have rather seen him step up against a stiffer competition in his weight class, you know, on the similar path, career path or trajectory as Jake is. Maybe, you know, an established, young, undefeated fighter with real talent. But I digress.
I mean, the big difference with boxing and other sports can be connected to this being professional rules, right? This little conversation.
That's where, right.
Because I don't think you're going to see a game between, you know, the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants be called, you know, a professional football game. But in this game, we're going to use rules where, you know, a first down is 12 yards. No, maybe a first down is 8 yards because they made it a little easier in this fight. So a first down instead of 10 yards, a first down will be 8 yards. You know, you get 5 plays instead of 4, right? Normally you get 4 plays, Sam.
Yeah.
You get 5. I don't think that football would ever have that kind of situation, for whatever reason, whatever, would have that kind of situation and then say, yeah, it's the same NFL professional sport as it always has been.
That's right.
I don't know. It's amazing how boxing, again, can just twist and turn itself like a pretzel into so many different things for those.
That's a good point.
Always for the same reason, though. Money.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress.
Well, the one thing I want to say is whether you're going to fight for 3 rounds or 2 rounds, the one thing that I hope both guys are doing is taking their athletic greens.
Yeah.
Go to athleticgreens.com/Alice and get 10 of the free travel packs with your first purchase. Athletic Greens is the all-in-one green drink. It's the daily it's the only daily supplement you need. It's got all your vitamins, nutrients, minerals, probiotics, prebiotics, all in a green powder drink that tastes great. One scoop in the morning mixed with 10 ounces of water, boom, you're covered for the day. Even if you're eating the healthiest diet, Athletic Greens has is made from 75 whole food sourced ingredients. So if you're missing some of the micronutrients in your diet, Athletic Greens is going to be your insurance policy to make sure you've got all your bases covered. Go to athleticgreens.com/Atlas to get 10 of the free travel packs with your first purchase. I have a subscription. I love this stuff, and they've been with us from the beginning. athleticgreens.com. Let's talk boxing, Teddy.
Before we get into the fights of the weekend, of course, the upcoming Canelo Munguia fight, I just wanted to do a little review of last week's show.
Sure.
You know the show, Pardon the Interruption, on ESPN.
Of course.
Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilpon, they do a great job. They've been, you know, they've been a top show for so many years. And one of the things they do is they had a guy where after every show, he would correct the mistakes they made, because believe it or not, people make mistakes, and he would go over whatever the mistakes were of the show here and there. So I'm going to do a little review of last week's show, corrections, if you will. First of all, I want to tell the fans that they're right. I was wrong when I stated that it was Ryan Garcia's first fight back since his KO loss to Tank Davis. Of course, I missed that one. He had beaten Duarte after the Davis fight, which indeed was important for his confidence coming into this fight. But I would also still say that the shadow of the Davis fight still touched on Garcia, and it caused both some doubt and also pressure to, you know, redeem himself and reclaim credibility. Also, I stated that it was wrong or not truly correct to claim Garcia was crazy like a fox, because after all, by winning, he proved that he was not crazy and that was all a ploy. What I was trying to say, if it didn't come out clearly to everybody, was that, yes, he won, but it does not mean he wasn't still crazy. And look, I'm not saying he's crazy. I'm just saying it doesn't mean that he truly, if not crazy, at least definitely in some strange mental spaces that he had never been in before. That he was in a messed up place. After all, there's plenty of examples where people can have mental issues and still be, you know, productive at work. You know, there's a thing called functioning alcoholics. I know people that have drug alcohol problems. They still can be productive. I'm not saying it doesn't hurt them. Of course it does. I guess what I was saying was to totally dismiss his behavior prior to the fight and just chalk it up to him having fooled all of us, it just wasn't reasonable. Those issues were real, and to his credit, he still was able to go and be productive in the ring. So, as I said last week, congratulations to his ability to face what he needed to in the end and triumph. He faced down the devil, as I often say, and he won. Matter of fact, I was going to ask, I know the fans sometimes like this stuff. I was going to ask Rob if he could put up a little bit of the music, because I think it should be his new ring entrance music from the Charlie Daniels Band. The Devil Went Down to Georgia. I'd like to do that. I'd like to make my little my little request for that to be maybe his new ring entrance song. I think it would fit perfectly, and I think people would get a kick out and like it. It's got a nice tune to it too, and I think it makes some sense. I think that, you know, that it, again, it doesn't mean that the devil will never show up again or isn't still hovering around. I hope at the end of the day that Ryan has someone around him to help him beyond making future fights. You know, that's my biggest hope for. Last but not least, he did play us and, more importantly, Haney and his dad into believing that he wasn't ready or in shape, and that would have, you know, that they were going to have an easy fight, an easy night. And I think that it did affect Haney and his preparation, where it affected them into making misjudgments, maybe bad judgments, like their approach to the fight, that rather than, you know, being his normal self, and I know I broke it down last week, but rather than just being his normal self where he's cautious, you know, that's him. Well, where, you know, he liked to stay on the outside, set traps, use his jab, set up combinations. They felt they could just be more aggressive and basically, you know, put Ryan out of his misery, so to speak, after everything we had, you know, we had seen. And also perhaps the biggest thing they let go, that normally under normal conditions, I don't think they would have, Ken, and that was the weight. Normally, I think that they would have probably made him make the weight or not fight. And also, normally, I think that they would have had a rehydration clause in the contract. But again, with everything they had seen with the last 2 months or so, they didn't think that it would matter. That's just what I wanted to say, You know, if you disagree or you don't like it, fine. You know, no problem. Go somewhere else to listen for your boxing news and breakdowns, or just stay here and conversate with me and Ken, which is what it should always be about. Either way, thanks to all the fans for always being here. And that's it. I just wanted to do that little review and my little corrections. I'm sure the people love to see when I correct myself, because to prove that I'm not that smart, I'm just trying to be as best I can be.
Imagine that there are some people out there that legitimately get offended, upset at mistakes. They feel like trolling and leaving shitty comments on YouTube or Instagram is the way to go. And it always makes me laugh. I'm like, what? When you leave a negative comment for another man, I wonder, like, what's the goal there? What's the intention? I don't know that in my life anyone's ever come up to me in person and said, hey, you're an idiot because of XYZ you said online. But online, they'll say whatever they want to say. It's one of the great mysteries of the world.
What you're touching, referring to back when I was a young kid, and some of these idiots would be outside, you know, drinking in a bar, and we would call these guys that never were prone to being whatever, all of a sudden they got beer muscles.
Yeah, of course.
Some of these people get internet muscles.
For sure.
Sam's laughing.
It makes me crazy, because I always think, like, do you think your friends are going to be impressed by you trolling another man online? Like, what is the ultimate goal? Like, we're here trying to do a good job. So whether it's this show or if I put something up on Instagram and people leave a nasty comment, I'm like, what is the motivation there? What is triggering? Like, we don't know each other. I'm never going to meet you, but you feel a need to, like, try to hurt my feelings with the nasty comments, or anyone's feelings for that matter. Oh, it's just so befuddling to me. It's like I heard Joe Rogan talk about it. He's like, you'll never hear someone doing better than you talking shit about you online. It's never someone who's doing better.
Hey, look, an old-time boxing guy once told me years ago when, you know, when I was doing my ESPN, he said, Teddy, I got to be honest, 90% of your stuff is really pretty good comments for what's out there normally. He said, it's horrendous, the world out there, with what they say to some of these people that are out in the public like you are. You know, so you're doing pretty good. And sometimes it could be a little less than 90, but he said most of it's pretty good. But he said, when they really go off the ledge, so to speak, like you're talking about, and it could usually be tracked down to a couple things. Sometimes it's as simple as jealousy, believe it or not. I should be doing that. I'm not doing. I mean, what are you jealous? Go do something.
Yeah.
Nobody's stopping you. You know, sometimes it could be somebody, I touched on it before, under a pseudo name that just doesn't like you. So, you know, their job is to take shots at you, you know, because they're being hateful, whatever you, I guess that's just being hateful, you know. Other times, you know, it could be just people don't have a life. they really, they don't.
I know, you're right. But I would say this, there are some fans that are good fans of the show, and they leave constructive criticism.
That's fine.
If you have constructive criticism, hey, you said this
that's
wrong
great.
Or that wrong. Now,
beautiful.
Obviously, sometimes
no,
I'm like, yeah, no kidding. It's obviously. But I like that. Cool.
Nobody's right all the time. Nobody here is right or claiming to be right all the time.
That's right.
It's all opinion. That's all. And
that's right.
But at the same time, you know, I appreciate when people say, Teddy, when they correct me. In a civil way. I do.
No,
I appreciate it. I think I just showed that.
When people are being constructive, I take the criticism. Well, let's talk. There's plenty to talk about with these two fights.
Yeah.
Virgil Ortiz, before the fight, must have told the ring announcers that he was hoping to get some rounds. He's been inactive for a little while, but that didn't come to fruition. Perfectly placed body punch puts away Thomas Delorme in the first round. Just a complete walkover. Just one beautifully placed body shot puts him away. What'd you think? Not much to judge the performance on, but he did what he had to do.
Look, you gotta love Ortiz. He's we don't have a full understanding of how good he is yet, because he hasn't taken a real step up yet. We're gonna get an idea when he fights against Tim Tszyu. That's going to give us better idea. And I can't wait for that fight. I will break it down when that fight gets closer. My first concern about that fight, and I love it, the fight, but my concern is that Tszyu had a horrible cut when he lost his title to Fedora, and it changed the whole fight, the whole dynamic of the fight and the outcome of the fight, taking nothing away from Fedora, the fight that he fought a terrific fight. But that blood really did change the course of that fight, I believe. But either way, it was a bad deep cut. Now, August, I think they're talking about the fight. The cut will be healed by then. But where it won't be healed is doing training now to get ready for that date. It won't be healed. Right. So that would be my little concern about that. But that's from a boxing guy.
They're targeting August 3rd in L.A.
Yeah, so anyway, that was my... I just want to throw that in. But I can't wait to see that fight. That fight will be more interesting than these other fights. Look, these fights are planned executions in a way. I know DeLorme was 34. He's 34 years old. He's been knocked out four times. He's 26-7-1, or he was going in. And look, he was once, I know him very well, he was once a solid fighter, that fought good fighters. But that day isn't now. That day is past. And so Golden Boy, they did their job. They picked a guy that is a credible enough guy who has had a credible career. Again, he was a solid fighter. But at this point in his career, he's not that guy. And they picked him for that reason. And they were right. And look, having said all that, it still took a perfectly placed left hook under the elbow of DeLorme to do what it did. Ortiz did that. He placed a beautiful, and that's his forte. That is his calling card. I mean, that's his Sunday punch. That's what he's about. He's got a good jab. I think he's technically solid, but he's a body puncher. He's a committed body puncher. He's 21-0 with 21 knockouts. And he placed that left hook, one of the most debilitating punches in the sport. Placed it beautifully just under the elbow. And it was over, just like that, almost before it got started. So, again, that's why I brought in Tim Tszyu, because that's where the talk goes now. The fight with Tim Tszyu, where we might finally get a chance to see Ortiz tested in a true sense. When it gets closer, I will, I'll break it down and we'll really get into the weeds with it. But I will say this about Ortiz, in favor of him too, is that he's been so inactive, because he had been sick, he had been dealing with different, issues and that caused him to be inactive. And he's only had a couple fights now in the last, I think this was his second fight after the one he had a couple months ago, which was also a one-round fight. And he had been off for, 2 years before that? I know he'd been off.
2 years, more.
Yeah, more than two years.
Year and a half. He fought in August of 22 and then came back in January of 24. And again, both of his last two fights, to your point, both first-round stoppages against Frederick Lawson and now Thomas DeLorme.
So that has to be weighed into it that, he's been inactive and they're being careful and all that stuff. Hey, all right, no problem. But now we're going to, now it's time, to get past the appetizers and get to the entree. Get to the main course. And that'll be in August against Tim Tszyu. And I'll tell you, I'll bring my knife and fork and I'll be ready to dig in.
Well, let's talk main event, because another guy who hasn't been very active recently, and that's Jose Ramirez, was in against Rances Barthelemy. Interesting fight, this one. Ramirez looked good the first two rounds, and all of a sudden Barthelemy just starts hitting him with 1-2s from the southpaw stance, and it seemed like he couldn't miss. Every single straight left hand seemed to find a home on Ramirez's chin. It was as I'm watching, I'm like, is someone going to tell him what to do here? It looked like he'd never been in with a southpaw.
And he hurt him. He hurt him. He hurt him bad.
And Barthelemy would just take punches, have this high defense, and then when he opened up, he seemed to score. I don't know if he did. He doubted his conditioning or if Jose was cracking him so hard that he couldn't bear to take his hands down. But when he opened up and threw that straight left, almost every time, right on the chin, and it rattled him every time. It's a super interesting fight. What did you think of the performance, and what would you have done if you're in the corner of Ramirez when he comes back after getting touched with that left every time? What adjustments would you have him make?
Move the other way. That might be one.
Aside from the obvious.
You're fighting a guy who's going southpaw. Barthelemy, former world champion, two different weight classes. He switches, but he was really effective as a southpaw. So you're fighting a southpaw, move to your left, away from the left hand, the power punch. That would be one thing I would say. The other thing I would say is something that, quite frankly, maybe they did say, and Ramirez did do it later in the fight. Be more cautiously aggressive. You know, coming back to jab, be cautiously aggressive because the guy is dangerous. And the thing is, don't stand up straight and on the outside. That's when he got caught. When he stood straight or stiff on the out, he almost got stiffened by standing up straight in front of the guy outside. Also on the inside, Barthelemy's experienced enough where he was trying to time him in spots on the inside too with some shots. So you got to keep your shots close, tight. You got to keep them short. You got to keep your head in a good defensive position, not in the middle, whereas you're punching, you could get time. So you got to be, you know, you got to be defensively responsible with the offense and not get lulled to sleep by the inactivity of a guy like Barthelemy, because he's not throwing in spots like you said. And he's not throwing for 30 seconds, 40 seconds. And then all of a sudden he catches you by surprise. Same thing happened the week before in a much bigger fight. In the Haney, you know, Garcia fight, there were spots where Garcia's not throwing. Haney probably got a little, you know, relaxed, thinking nothing's coming. And then, bang, something comes. So you can never get relaxed in that ring. You want to be calm in the ring. You want to be seeing things in the ring. But you never want to get relaxed to the point where you're in any way assuming that something's dangerous ain't around the corner. You can never, ever assume that. You got to always be on high alert when you're in that ring for that reason. I'll tell you another interesting parallel with last week's fight of Garcia and Haney with this fight with Ramirez and Barthelemy. The scoring was pretty easy in this fight because a little bit like the fight last week, every round that Haney didn't get hurt, he won. For the most part, he won. When he got hurt, he lost. The difference was he lost bigger rounds, 10-8 rounds. Maybe one round could have been a 10-7. I know there was one time there was a point taken away for hitting on the break, so that canceled out the 10-8 round. But for the most part, when Garcia won a round, he won it bigger, and he won it because he hurt Haney. Haney didn't get hurt. He won a round. Same thing here. When Ramirez didn't get hurt by Barthelemy, which he did with that left hand you pointed out in several rounds, he won the round. And I'll tell you another thing that was interesting. Barthelemy understood at this junction in his career, at 38 years of age, he wasn't in there to win a decision. He was not going to outwork a younger Ramirez who fights at a high work level anyway. High punch level. He wasn't going to outwork him. He was going to knock him out. If he won, he was going to win by knocking him out, by hurting him. And he fought that way. And I give him credit for having that fight plan. And I answer another one of your questions, Ken, that you brought up, a good question. When you first introduced this fight, you said why it was hard to understand why Barthelemy wasn't more active because when he did throw the left hand, you know, obviously he was very effective. When he did let his hands go, especially when he set up that left hand in the spots that he did. I got an answer for that. And Barthelemy, I kind of answered already. Barthelemy made it very clear. He understood better than anyone what he is at this point in his career. He's 38 years old. Now, remember, this is a kid who escaped, you know, from Cuba, like a lot of great fighters did, great amateurs, and they came over here, became world champions. He was an Olympian. He's a two-time world champion when he came over here, but he was Olympian in Cuba. A lot of those fighters from Cuba, when they escape with nothing. They get on a raft, they get on a boat, whatever way they get out of there. Sometimes they might be in a tournament and they defect in a different country if they can pull that off. But for the most part, it's hazardous. It's hazardous, and it's, you know, it's in the middle of the night, or you know, it's done without any ability to say, hey, I'm bringing this with me, I'm bringing that with me. You're just getting out of there, and you're looking to get to the United States of America and have a different life, a better life. And the point I make is there's no birth certificates quite often. So he's 38 years old, that we're told. He could be, for all we know, he could be 40, 41, 42. He understood that. I thought Barthelemy did a marvelous job of conserving his energy, controlling the pace the best he could to keep it at a slower pace and fight at a distance for the most part, where it gave him a chance to land his best punch, his left hand, his straight left hand from the southpaw position. And he's a wiry guy. He's wiry guys, I always say it, they can punch. They get torque. They get leverage in their punches. They can punch. Alexis Oquello, Carlos Zarate, Bob Foster. I could just go on and on and on. Tommy Hearns, when he was a welterweight. I could go on and on and on. Tall, thin guys, they usually get power. Lou Jenkins, I'll go back to one of my favorites back in the 40s, 30s. Lou Jenkins, another one. Lightweight champion of the world, can punch like hell. A skinny guy. But they also, the other side of it, to the credit of Ramirez, there's a long, tall, skinny body in front of you. There's a lot of body to attack, a thin body to attack. And Ramirez was trying to do that. His plan was, Barthelemy's plan was to slow down the pace and hurt Ramirez at some point, try to knock him out. And keep it as not win a decision. Ramirez's plan was to wear him down. Keep pressure on him. Do what Ramirez does. Keep pressure on him. Wear him down to the body. Break him down. And he almost did. He started breaking him down late in the fight. But Barthelemy showed a lot of heart. And he showed experience. He really showed you what it means to use experience. Whether you're in a courtroom. Whether you're a doctor. Teacher. Whether you're a baseball player. You know, whatever vocation you're in, experience, when you have it, is so important if you use it. He put on a classic, really a classroom lesson of how to use experience in all the ways that he did the other night, throughout the night. He really used his experience to almost win a fight, to give himself a chance to win a fight that he was supposed to be. He was an underdog for a reason, because of the point he is at his career, at this point in his career. Ramirez, as much as Barthelemy is faded, obviously at 38 years old, but he could still punch, because that's the one thing that doesn't leave you. George Foreman proved that against my fighter. Power is the last thing to leave you. Age does not, you know, destroy power. It might destroy speed and timing and reflexes and erode those things, but not power. But Ramirez, as much as Barthelemy has obviously eroded a little bit over the years, Ramirez is not the same fight he was 2 years ago. He is a bit sharp one. He puts miles on the odometer, that kid, with the style that he fights. You know, he's a kid that, you know, also his only loss is to Josh Chandler. He's a former world champ, Ramirez. He's got a lot of miles on the odometer, and the style that he fights makes them hard miles. You know, it's one thing if you got miles on your odometer in a car and you're doing mostly Sunday driving. You know, you're going 40 miles an hour, 45 miles an hour. You're not really pushing it. You're not going over hills. You're not going up in rocky terrain. You're not going, you know, on 200-mile trips, 400-mile trips. You're not driving 80 miles an hour. You know, those kind of miles will wear the engine out faster. The more leisurely miles will not. And the same thing like a Floyd Mayweather. Genius defensive fighter. You know, though not a lot of miles on the old diamond. That's not going to affect him so much. But when you fight a style like Ramirez and you put those hard miles on it, yeah, you're gonna see wear and tear. You're going to see some signs of being, you know, sharp one. A little less in certain areas. But having said that, he did a good job. He got the win. He's, you know, obviously he's now with Golden Boy. He'll be looking for a big fight. And it was a good fight. It was really an entertaining fight. I mean, the ebbs and flows.
Barthelemy was lucky in the third round. He didn't lose a point of possible disqualification. He knocked Ramirez down. The ref called it a slip. But then he hit him two really good shots while he was on the ground.
He did.
Dangerously close.
He did.
Lucky he didn't hurt him.
No, he did. And luckily, the Ramirez is a real fighter in the way I mean this. This is what I mean. A real tough guy in a way that some guys would have played it out and maybe just taken a little bit of a, you know, a flop.
Of course.
We see it.
Yep.
We see it in life. We see it in soccer. We see it in basketball. Guy takes a flop. You know, you see it in boxing. Guy might have taken a flop and said, oh, and then the referee is given no choice but maybe contemplate, you know, disqualifying. But
that's
no,
right.
Ramirez don't play that. Ramirez is a real tough guy, a real fighter.
Nope.
So he ain't going to go down that road. But I also think, and you just said it, Barthelemy got, you're right, he's lucky he didn't hurt him and get disqualified, but he also got robbed of a knockdown. Because that was a
big
knockdown.
Time.
I mean, that was a knockdown.
Clear as the day is long.
And Ramirez, again, he got hurt in the first half of the fight several times. In the later half of the fight, he buttoned up with his a little bit with his aggression, with his defense, and being aggressive, tightened up a little bit more with his jab. So he was cognizant. He was cognizant that, hey, you know, this guy's looking to do one thing. Nail me with one time, beautifully timed shot. And I got to make sure that doesn't happen. I could be winning 2 minutes and 59 seconds of a round and get caught and lose the fight. So he understood yep. that and trying to be more disciplined with his aggression, not being reckless with it. So I appreciated that. I saw that. I thought it was a good fight. It was really
I liked it.
It was an entertaining. It was a terrific fight. It was very entertaining. And even at the end, when it looked like Ramirez finally got what he wanted, the high tide finally came in, so to speak, and he was breaking down and wearing down Barthelemy. Even then, Barthelemy was still in the 12th round looking to land that one shot to pull it out of the fire where you just couldn't relax on him. So it was a good, nice, really, really nice fight. Kid Blast, nickname of Barthelemy. Kid Blast, what an appropriate name because, man, that's one thing he's still got. He's got that last.
I'm trying to find the name of the two guys on that bare knuckle fight that I sent to you over the weekend.
Yeah, I get it for you.
Riggs versus Angulo in the bare knuckle fighting championships. And I mean, for the first, I don't know, minute and a half, 2 minutes, it looked like Riggs was going to blast this guy out of the arena. At one point, he had Angulo by the hair and was just feeding him lefts and rights, whatever hand he was hitting him with. And I was watching it thinking, my God, how much is the ref going to let go here? And then Angulo absorbs everything, and he was hurt. Absorbs everything, comes back, and Riggs kind of punched himself out, and Angulo knocked him out cold. What a friggin' fight that was. I mean, that was like two legitimately tough guys. My God, they were trying to kill each other. They've had some really good shows, Bare Knuckles, and shout out to Mike Perry, who continues to be the king of Bare Knuckles. He wins against Thiago Alves over the weekend in the main event and continues his ass-kicking tour in the Bare Knuckles fighting championships. But I know you had a chance to see that. How'd you like that Bare Knuckle battle?
Yeah, I mean, entertaining. I guess the sport's catching on now. I heard Conor McGregor's getting involved in it too now.
He took an ownership stake.
Yeah, so it's only going to get bigger. My first question, and it's a sincere question. It's not being like I'm kidding. Are the rules where you're allowed to hold the guy by the hair and hit him, or was it the referee not doing his job?
I had the same question. I got to believe that this was so egregious that you must be able to pull the guy's hair because he was blatantly holding him by his hair and feeding him punches.
You wouldn't be allowed to do that in UFC. Why would you be allowed, and UFC is as rough as it gets, right? Why would you be allowed to hold his hair? That was my first question. That is it allowed, or did the referee not see it somehow? I don't know how he didn't see it, unless he was, you know, he had a cataract in that eye. Maybe he needs some kind of vision improvement, the referee. I don't know.
What I'm seeing online right now is that it's illegal to pull the hair, but I mean, the ref... how he could have missed this, it was ongoing for like a good 10 seconds of him just holding the guy's hair and feeding him punches.
Did the ref bet on Diggs? I mean, listen, that was my first question. The other thing I just want to say is that Alfredo Angulo is a former WBO middleweight boxing champion. And he fights the same way. You're going to laugh, Ken, but he fights the same way in bare knuckle as he did in boxing. He just walks in with a great chin, with all the heart in the world, takes whatever you give him, and either he gets you or you get him. It's no different. He don't fight any different in this, and you would think there'd be a difference. You'd think that, well, this would be less polished and more barbaric and, you know, more crude, but he was pretty crude and, barbaric.
He took some shots.
Yeah, tough. And I'm saying it in a way of admiration towards him, as far as his heart and his character of toughness. But that's how he fought as a boxer, and that's how obviously he fights as a bare knuckle guy, but. I always say at the end, it came down to the same thing, Ken. Here he is, he's getting his hair pulled, which is a terrible foul.
And when that is illegal, I'm looking at the rules now, and I don't know how the ref missed it, but maybe the ref thought he had him in like a tie clinch, like holding the back of his head and punching him, which I think is legal. I think you can do like some clinching there.
You can't do that. I'll tell you why. The worst foul maybe in boxing, and I would think it would be in any combat sport, the worst foul could be, besides hitting in the back of the head, which is obviously in a weak spot of your head, you could really hurt somebody. It's a softer spot. It's a weaker spot. Can't protect yourself at all. That's a rapid punch. But aside from that, holding somebody behind the head and hitting them, or by the hair, same thing, and hitting them, that is as egregious a foul and dangerous of fouls you can have, because the head can't give, the neck can't give and alleviate some of the blow, dissipate some of the blow by giving a little bit. And you're being pulled into the punch, and there's no give in the head, like I said, or the neck, where you're absorbing the full, you know, the impact of the blow. I mean, and that makes it really dangerous, a really dangerous punch and foul. And why it has to be a foul, because if you hold somebody and you're hitting them and they can't give, man, the impact of the punch has been multiplied by many, So, and there is a precedent for such a foul resulting, or at least people thought it resulted in the death of a fighter in the ring. It was back in the, I guess it was the, was it the 50s? I guess the 50s, with Emil Griffith and Kenny Kid Perrette. And there was a lot of bad blood in that fight. And Griffith caught Kenny Kid Perrette in the corner and was unloading.
March 1962.
Yeah, 62. And he caught him in the corner and he was hitting him punch after punch. He was catching him with uppercuts. I forget what else he was, but it didn't matter. The bottom line was, he was catching him with one hand, the great Emil Griffith, and both of them were tremendous fighters, both of them world champions in their own right. And Griffith is hitting him and holding him behind the head. And the referee, Ruby Goldstein, who had been a fighter, and he was a good ref, but he was in a bad spot. He was on the other side, and he couldn't see it. And he's holding him behind the head, and he's hitting him, and the head's not giving. And he's out. And then finally, when he let go and the referee got in there, Kid Perrette just sank to the floor and he never recovered. He went into a coma. He never recovered. And a lot of people said it was because of that foul, you know. And now, also, as long as I'm on it, I will say my thoughts and Customato's thoughts. We felt, and Cuz felt, and would always tell me, that the damage more likely had come 4 months earlier when Perrette had taken a terrible beating in a fight with a middleweight. I think it was a non-title fight, a champion or a former champion, but I believe it was a non-title fight. But 4 months earlier, he had taken a brutal beating. And he didn't get enough time to recover. And then he went into this fight, obviously a fight with a great fighter, Emil Griffith, and again, you know, took that kind of punishment. So Cuss always would tell me, and I agreed with him after I, you know, saw all the evidence, or the evidence that we could see, as without ever knowing for sure what it could be. I agreed with him that he shouldn't have been in the ring at least 4 months after taking such a ferocious beating in that fight earlier. But either way, at the end of the day, Angulo took all those punches, and they were wide punches. You know, they were the wide punches of a guy who's not a polished guy. And he's taken all those shots while his hands being held and his head can't give, and showing all that heart and that great chin. And then all of a sudden, when he finally broke loose, and I hope we can show this tape. I asked Rob if he could get the tape of this up. I hope he got it up. But if he did get it up, I wanted to kind of break it down as it went, if we could do that now. If we can't, I will just walk it. I'll talk through it. And when the people do see it, hopefully we can get it up there for him before the fight's put up. For is when he finally broke loose from the hair grip, and there became a little space. What happens is Riggs goes right back at him, as he had been doing with wide punches. Jeremy Riggs, he goes right back at him with wide punches. But now that there's space after he broke loose from the hair, Angulo throws a straight right hand. And as I always say, straight beats round. It's that simple, Ken.
Every time I see that happen, I always think that too. Oh, straight hand beats the right. Same thing with Bartholomew against Ramirez. Yeah, straight left, right down the middle.
Yeah, straight right hands beat left hooks if they're thrown wide, and especially in front. So as he's thrown wide, he finally gets a little space, does Angulo, and he throws a straight right hand down the pipe, and it's, you know, good night for Mr. Jeremy Riggs. Caught him right on the button. So that was a lot of people were commenting on that. That made its rounds in the internet, that's for sure, because it was short. What was it, 90 seconds or something? But short and plenty of action.
Yep. And then, like I said, Mike Perry won the main event, and Big Ben Rothwell, former MMA fighter, beat Mick Terrell, and he knocked Mick Terrell down, and when he fell down, he broke his arm. It was a terrible injury. But yeah, the guys are getting paid pretty good. Mike Perry, $600,000 allegedly. Ben Rothwell got $150,000. I'm trying to find what Angulo and Riggs got paid, because whatever it is, it wasn't enough.
Wow.
They were killing each other. You would have never, ever predicted who was going to win that. I was showing it to my children. I was like, hey, look at this fight real quick. Tell me who you think is going to win this fight. And for a minute and a half, you know, it's Riggs just pounding the crap out of Angulo. And then one straight shot, boom, lights out. But let's talk about the fight that everyone wants to
Before we do that, let me do a real quick. I just got it, actually. I wanted to just a real quick so we don't get yelled at by any of our, you know, beautiful fans that we, you know, that we care a lot about, and we never want them upset saying we didn't cover some. So just a real tiny, quick touch on the JoJo Diaz-Duarte fight. You know, JoJo Diaz, former world champion, former Olympian. Duarte's had his last fight, he had been stopped by that's the fight I forgot to mention, that Ryan Garcia had after the Tank Davis fight, before the Haney fight. And Duarte fought a real good fight against Ryan Garcia, but he got stopped late in the fight. And Diaz is at a point in his career where, you know, you got to think about retiring. He's had a terrific career. He's as tough as they come. He's not a puncher. That is something that's, you know, either you have power or you don't have power. You're either born a puncher or you're not. We don't make punches. They get born. He's a southpaw. Diaz has lost four of his last five. Obviously, he's at a point in his career that, you know, doesn't allow him to win at this level, quite frankly. And I feel bad in a way for him, because he's a kid that's had a wild life. He's a kid that's has not always lived the right way outside, where you know, preparing for a fight as far as, you know, doing the right things, taking care of your body, everything. He partied. He very honest about it, that he partied a lot. And now that he's gotten to a place later in his life where he's not doing those things, which is great, and I applaud him for that. But the sad part is that you can't get back what is gone. The horse is out of the barn. He ain't coming back. You know, that ability that he had 5 years ago, at this point in his career, it's not the same. He, you know, he is a guy that is a bit shop-worn, obviously. And his style is to pick spots. He was picking spots. He was boxing pretty well. He was in really good shape. You could see that. But he got worn down by Duarte. Duarte's younger. He looked bigger. He pressed the action, being aggressive, going to the body, looking to wear down Diaz, and it worked for him. You know, it worked for him as the fight got late. He started to wear him down. Diaz was busy early on, controlling the tempo. doing a good job of picking spots, counterpunching, trying to stay on the outside from the bigger Duarte, trying not to let Duarte set up camp on the inside where he could, you know, get in the trenches and go to his body and, as I said, break him down. But Duarte stepped up to pressure as is his style, as he was supposed to do against Diaz. And Duarte started breaking him down late in the fight, finally got to him. I want to, what round was it where he finally got to him?
Ninth round, first time Diaz has ever been stopped, too.
First time stopped. In his 40th fight. Ninth. You know, he broke, like I said, it was, Diaz was doing everything he could and looked, you know, looked good early. But that is when the signs of being older show, you know, late in the fight where you just don't sustain the durability. You don't sustain, you know, the things that you could sustain when you're younger. He's not able to consistently fight the kind of fight he needs to fight physically at this point in his career against top guys. He'll still beat other guys, I think, because of his experience. But he doesn't want that. He wants, obviously, at this point, if he can't get the title back or have a big fight that's meaningful, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to go back to fighting those kind of fights. For what? He's done that already. You know, he's had a great career. And like I said, you have to be cognizant when it's time to get out. You have to be aware when it does come time for everybody. I think he's at that point. I'm not trying to, you know, say that, you know, he can't still make a living and all that. But this is a tough living. This is a living in a business that gets dangerous. And when you do get to that point where you can't do what you used to be able to do at that level, you have to consider, you know, saying, hey, I had a great career. I was an Olympian. I was a world champion, you know, and you got to think about when it's time to walk out that door. I think he's at that point of having to think about that. Although he said after the fight that he was, you know, that he was going to fight again. But I just wanted to touch on that real quick.
Yeah, no problem.
I thought it was a good stoppage by the ref. Diaz, you know, I think that he stopped it at the right time. I do think he, like I said, he should consider retirement. He's had a great career. I feel bad, like I said, I because now he finally got to the place where he's living right outside the ring. He looked in good shape, but the things that are gone are gone. They don't.
That's,
you know,
a good point.
They don't come back. So
that's right.
So the one thing for Duarte also had a new trainer, Robert Diaz, the former world champion, top trainer, obviously. And I have to say, yeah, he fought an older Diaz who's sharp one, but a Diaz who was in good shape, a Diaz who early on was on his game, doing what he had to do, move, pot shot, pick spots, like I was saying. But Duarte showed improvement. I mean, he's always going to be an aggressive guy, good body puncher, you know, a guy who tries to impose his will and his physicality on you for the most part, which he tried to do also with Ryan Garcia. Obviously, he was a different level of fighter that he was doing it with, and a different level of power because Diaz is not a puncher. But I saw an improvement since Diaz took over Duarte. And where I saw the improvement is still aggressive, but he's placing his punches better since he's been with Diaz rather than just throwing punches. And it played out well for him. You know, it took time for him to get to where he wanted to get to, where he broke Diaz down. But when he did trap him on the ropes, when he did get him in the corners, instead of, again, just throwing a volume of punches, he was placing them in a more educated way, which is the sign of somebody teaching him, since he didn't do it in that way before. So again, the improvement from being with Robert Garcia was there.
Let's talk about the Golden Goose is back in action. Canelo Alvarez in against the young Jaime Munguia. Anticipated fight. I don't know. I'm dying to hear what you think. I think it's going to be too much for Jaime Munguia. But curious to see Canelo in there with a young fit guy. What are you looking for in this one?
First thing you got to realize, first, number one, Alvarez is the Golden Goose. Alvarez brings the money, brings the pay-per-view. Alvarez gets his way. He gets to choose what he wants. He's that guy because he brings this, right? De Niro, Mucho. So he picked Munguia. Munguia didn't pick him. That's all you need to know. He picked Munguia. And his people picked him for a reason. And I think they're right. Except there is one X factor, one possible fly in the ointment here to them being right. And Alvarez, you know, winning this fight. And that's what I just talked about in the Diaz fight with Duarte. Old man time. That's the one thing. I think Alvarez is starting to show signs of slippage a little bit. He's still a top guy, but he's showing a little signs of slippage. Maybe he showed it when he wasn't up for the fight. Maybe that was it. He fought Ryder from England, and he didn't look great. And Ryder's a tough guy, you know, and he maybe a couple years earlier, Ryder wouldn't have went the distance. But Ryder's a tough guy. He's a legitimate guy. But I still thought Alvarez should have done better with Ryder, handled him a little better. And either he showed slippage in that fight or he wasn't up for it. And that's possible. Where you're at this point in a career, you made so much money, you accomplished so much like Alvarez, Canelo has, where you can't get up for the fights that don't threaten you, that don't, you know, don't tease you in a way that they make you, they make you feel like, oh, wow, I'm, you know, this is a one I got to be ready for. This is one I have to be, you know, on my P's and Q's. You know, sometimes when you've been in that many big fights and done the things that Canelo has done, that you fight down to your opposition. In your mind, the guys are easier fight. You fight down to that. You don't get up for it. He's going to be up for the Munguia fight. That's obvious. He's fighting a Mexican fighter. It's going to be a great pride involved, even though he said he would never fight a Mexican fighter. But hey, everyone's allowed to change their mind, right? Everyone's allowed. You know, Canelo's allowed to change. Cinnamon, he's allowed to change his mind too, right? Everyone can. So he's fighting a Mexican fighter. There's a lot of pride involved. It's Cinco de Mayo. So the atmosphere is going to be there for Canelo. But Munguia, I think he will do well in this atmosphere. I don't think this atmosphere, sometimes it could melt you. I don't think it'll happen with Munguia. I think that the atmosphere will rise him too. I think that he will be ready for the challenge in front of him. The problem here is that Alvarez is still a good puncher and a good accurate puncher. More accurate than Munguia. Munguia throws a lot. I think he's improving. I think he's still a work in progress, which is really strange to say about a guy who's got about 43 fights. But I do. I think he's still a guy that's getting better. And I think he's a guy that still needs to get better, especially in the defensive end of the pool, where he still needs to become harder to hit. He's still sometimes just too available. And look, he's shown a great chin. Great chin. But I've seen the greatest chins. And if you get hit by the right guy and you get hit often enough, sooner or later, there's no chin in the world that's going to stand up when you're getting caught by a good puncher clean. You know, we saw it. I know it's a different mix of sports, but we saw Ngannou, who got hit by an elbow, you know, the UFC former champion who fought against Fury so well in Saudi Arabia. And he got hit by an elbow and he took it. Great chin. And then what happens? He gets in there with Joshua, who's a terrific puncher, right? Gets hit a right hand, out. So no matter how good your chin is, if you get hit by the right guy, and especially if you get hit of the right punch where you don't see it, it's delivered properly, anyone's chin can quickly turn from iron into tin foil. So I still, I'm going to favor Canelo. I think Munguia's chances that, again, if old man time shows up and Alvarez is diminished, hey, that's going to serve Munguia. Munguia has a high motor. His motor runs high, fast. He throws, he keeps pressure going, he keeps a rhythm going. He likes to get into a rhythm where, you know, he's busy, he's outworking you. He's putting punches together better now than he was 4 or 5 fights ago. Again, I've seen that improvement in him. That motor is important. Where it gets in the way, where it gets him in trouble, is that a lot of those punches are in front of the guy where they could be a little wide, where there could be a little recklessness in the aggression, where he can get caught. And I think that's where Alvarez really has the advantage, where Canelo can catch him with something in between one of those wide shots. Maybe catch him with, everyone's thinking left hooks, right? Left hooks, you know, Canelo's left hook to the body. You know, he's a terrific body puncher. So is Munguia. You know, Munguia, 2 Mexican fighters. Left hook is the traditional punch that we think about with the great Mexican fighters. But let's not forget, Canelo knocked out Amir Khan some years ago. Everyone forgets about that fight. And he knocked him out with a straight right hand. Amir Khan led with a hook in front of him. There was a little space. Bang! Straight right hand. I was there. I was covering it for ESPN. Straight right hand down the middle. Catches him on the button. And it's over. And as much as everyone's thinking left hook, I think the right hand of Alvarez could really come into play here, where McGee is throwing one of those hooks in front, a little wide, and the straight right hand, just like with Amir Khan. You know, I know that McGee's got a better chin than Khan. He's a bigger guy naturally. I get that, although Khan had been a world champion, had been a good fighter. But if you catch him clean, you're going to hurt a guy. Alvarez is a good puncher. Alvarez is a good counterpuncher. He's not as busy as he once was. That's part of him getting older. I think because of that and because of the motor of Munguia, is there a chance that Munguia can outwork him, out-hustle him, win a decision doing that? Yeah. If you want to go on the side of Munguia, that's why I go there. I would go because of that. But at the end of the day, I think that Canelo is going to be able to time him with more accurate punches. Not outwork him, but throw the more succinct, the more concise punches, the punches that count more, and land them, even though Munguia is going to have the higher volume of punches. I think that's going to work against him. I think that if he gets a little careless coming in, Alvarez will have a chance to catch him with, again, one of the shorter, technically more solid punches that I think Canelo throws. That gives him an advantage of landing and hurting Munguia. I think Munguia's best chance, if I was training him, would be take it on the outside. Use your reach. You're a naturally bigger guy. You got a long reach. You got a good jab. Use your jab. Try to win a fight on the outside where you're not vulnerable to counterpunches, where you're not walking into counterpunches, where you're not doing some of Canelo's work for him by coming in and maybe being overly aggressive and having some recklessness with that aggression and making yourself a target. Stay on the outside where you're less of a target and see if you can use your legs. You got decent legs and win the fight that way. And then in spots when you got to, you know, take it to a more aggressive place, do it again. Do it behind the jab. Do it in a defensively responsible way. my pick is Alvarez, late round stoppage. He hurts Munguia with one of the punches I just described, maybe to the body with the left hook, maybe with the right hand in between a wide punch.
Let me give you the line for our friends at MyBookie. If you're going to bet on the fight, go to mybookie.ag. Use the promo code ATLAS for a 50% credit on your first deposit. MyBookie.ag. Teddy, the line, the money line is Canelo minus 625, Jaime Munguia plus 380. Does the line influence your pick whatsoever?
Yeah, I'm not laying 600. I think that Munguia is a liver dog than that. He's young. He's confident. He's got a great chin. He's the busier fighter at this point in his career. My concern with him is his defensive lapses, his defensive flaws, where Alvarez, who's still a good puncher, can catch him something and hurt him. But if McGee is able to survive that, and able to get through that and be at the last rounds and, like I said, control the outside with his reach, with his jab, there's a scenario. And where Canelo gets a little old, there's a scenario. And I'm admitting that. I'm putting that right out there where Munguia could win a decision.
Well, Munguia by decision will get you plus 700.
I would... Just for fun, I'm saying it very clear so nobody can accuse me of being on the fence. I am saying it according to these props. When there's props, you have to adjust to what the props are. You have to make your picks, your handicapping appropriate to the props, adjusted to the props. I'm telling you, I think Canelo wins the fight. So that's clear. I'm saying I think Canelo wins. But I would take a small wage on Munguia saying it's worth a shot. If they're going to give me plus 700, if he could pull off, if he could survive getting hurt, if he could, you know, his chin holds up, if he could fight smart enough on the outside with his reach that he could get to the end. And if he gets to the end, Canelo does slow down late in the fights at this point in his career. I could see a scenario where I put a small bet, I put, say, $100 on decision Munguia to get back how much? 800? 700?
700.
So I do that. But I'm saying I think Alvarez wins the fight. I might take Alvarez by knockout. What do I get if I take Alvarez by knockout?
Plus 184.
What do I get if I, with the over-under? I want to see where I get more.
So you can get the over-under, 10 and a half rounds, is minus 285 on the over, plus 194 on the under, or you can take, to go the distance, basically 2-1, that minus 200, that it will go the distance, plus 150 for no. So you can go with the 10 and a half, or you can just go, will it go the distance, minus 200 for yes, plus 150 for no.
Yeah, the lines makers, the bookies are saying, the smart guys are saying, it's going to go the distance. So you have to lay money yep. if you're gonna go with the over.
That's right.
I take a small play. I'm taking a couple plays. I'm doing a small play on Munguia. I'm not picking him to. I'm just saying, I think it's worth. If you're going to throw $700 in my face and say, if he lasts the distance and he gets his hand risen, which is going to be a problem. Getting your hand raised again. That's another problem in itself. That's a boxing problem. That's a boxing problem that we have inherently in this sport that I'm doing everything I can to correct, to get a national commission, you know, to try to solve that problem of bad judging, corrupt judging, whatever you want to call it. That's a problem. But I can't weigh that in. I'm not going to weigh that in right now. I'm just going to go... Well, who I think is going to win. I think Alvarez wins. But I will take a play on Munguia. I think it's worth getting 700 for 100 to say Munguia can win a decision. So I'll do that. I'll take the under. What do I get back? 185 or something? What do I get back for the under?
If you take the under 10.5, you get back 194. If you take the under, just will the fight go the distance, you're getting 150.
I'm going to go with the under. I think that there's a chance Alvarez hurts him late in the fight. So I'm going to hope that he hurts him before 10.5.
Yep.
I hope he hurts him. I don't want to lay. What do I got to lay if I take Alvarez straight up? I got to lay 600 or something?
625.
I just don't want to lay that at this point in his career. At this point in his career. A couple years ago, yeah. So I'll take the under. I'll put a small play on the under to get back 190 or whatever you just said. Is that what I get back, 190?
194 on the under 10.5.
I'll take the under 10.5. Thinking Alvarez has a good chance to hopefully catch him before that point and hurt him. So I'll take that. And I'll take Alvarez. If I take Alvarez by decision, I'm going to put 3 bets in. If I take Alvarez by decision, what do I get?
Minus 140.
Oh, minus 140. That's better than minus...
Lay 140.
That's better than 160. I'm going to take him... All right, I'll take a small bet on Canelo for decision because, yeah. You know, and I'll take a small bet for the under, and then I'll take that small bet that if Munguia somehow stays on the outside and out-hustles, out-jabs Alvarez being a little slower at this point in his career. His feet were never that fast where he can't close the gap on a guy who's standing on the outside, moving a little bit, jabbing. If that turns out to be the scenario, which I think could be, I could have a real nice ticket with plus 700 with Munguia.
Yeah, I like it. Well, that's all we got for this week, Teddy. Quiet weekend in the UFC as well, uneventful card over the weekend. And then, of course, we got the big Canelo fight next weekend that everyone will be tuning in for. So it'll be a big show next week when we break down all the action from Canelo Munguia. You got anything else before we say goodbye?
No, when you said big show, you made me think of the old show. You're probably too young. The Ed Sullivan Show. We've got a
big, I remember.
A really big show. A really big show.
Those guys set the standard for late night television.
Oh, my God. Ed Sullivan, Johnny Carson, all those guys. They really were.
Yeah. Well, I hope your knee gets better and keep grinding on your rehab. And we'll be back next week with all the action. Thanks to everyone for being with us. As usual, please like and subscribe to the show on YouTube. And keep the positive comments coming. Constructive criticism, not only accepted, but encouraged. Nastiness, please don't waste your time. Have a great week. I'll see you later, Teddy. Thanks.